So welcome to the transformative power of audio reading. I am Michelle Ludula, and I'm here to host this webinar solo today. Sometimes I have a guest, but I don't. I did interview three people, so I'll talk about them as I go through the webinar. Please join our community. It's edweb.net/emergingtech. You'll get your recording, you'll get the quiz, you'll get to download the slides and the chat log. And the chat log with 1,000 people is really dynamic. It's amazing. You get to join discussions and you get invitations to upcoming webinars. And we want to thank our sponsor, Mackin. And we'll get to share some of their Mackin good stuff today. I had a conversation with Mesa, who was one of our three interviewees for this webinar. So I touched base with Mackin yesterday, and they are doing great, holding out in Minnesota. And they provide students, schools, and librarians with age-appropriate print and digital fiction and nonfiction titles. And they have some great functionality in that Mackin VIA portal. So you'll get to see all that. They also have free multi-user ebooks from our generous partners. So this is all free stuff. All right. So this is a new slide for me. Up to 60% off of 140,000. Ebooks and audiobooks and hundreds of free Mackin classics, and you can get a Lightbox subscription and more. So lots of good new stuff. They have won award after award, year after year, and they're proud of those accomplishments. They also are really strong in the maker community, which right now isn't of great service to us, but I can't wait. I'm stockpiling all my materials waiting to go back to school. My husband's starting to wonder how long they're going to sit here. They have shared digital collections. I did an entire webinar on this in November, and really a great opportunity for states to form consortia so that they can really get way more product for their dollars. And also it really gives you an opportunity to buy into those licenses that seem so prohibitive and restrictive. You know, the 2-year licenses for one-to-one content seem crazy for a school environment, but if you're in a consortia, you have an opportunity to sort of buy into that. My name is Michelle Ludula. I am a school librarian at New Canaan High School, which means that I am a virtual school librarian as of March 12th. And I also do these webinars. This is my 104th, as Lisa has mentioned. And I teach online at Southern Connecticut State University. So my day jobs haven't changed all that much since we went into shutdown mode, but my day job at school has. And I'll talk about that probably in another webinar. I did last Wednesday, so that's always available as an archive. All right, so the resources for today's webinar are bit.ly/edwebet, as in EdWeb Emerging Tech 104, the 104th webinar. So this is my pet, and this webinar is a pet project. Not about my pet, but a pet project. And it, for me, a lot of what I'm going to talk about today started back in the late August of 2018. I latched on, this is what I'm talking about, long form interview podcasts. I got into Mark Maron's podcasts, and I think he's done maybe well over 1,000 of these. He started in 2009, and they're long form interviews, and he interviews all kinds of people, a lot of comedians, but a lot of actors and writers and music people. And I spent my entire summer listening to nothing but his podcast, like literally. And I use my ears all the time. And I realized at the end of the summer, this is a problem. I'm a school librarian. I do a lot of my book reading through audio content. In fact, most of my reading happens through audio content. And I hadn't read a book all summer because I was so busy with podcasting. And then in the meantime, people started talking about great TV shows. And I just felt there's so much great content out there. How do we even manage it? So that's kind of where this webinar actually came from. So I do listen to a ton of podcasts, and I'm realizing that it's really starting to take hold in the school where we're latching on to content and using it as great resources for our student learners. So what you're looking at now are word clouds, and we created these word clouds by collecting over the course of 2.5 years research questions from the entire junior class. So our juniors do research papers in the fall and in the spring in English and in social studies. And for those two research papers, they submit to us because we help them refine their research questions. So they submit their research questions to the librarians, and we collect them. We collected them all in spreadsheets for 2.5 years. And then we turned them in. Then we basically decided, okay, there are some categories. These fall into categories. So we were able to classify them into 12 categories. So those in black are the English ones, and those in white are in the social studies ones. So once we set up basically 12 or so categories for each discipline, we were able to group them and then create word clouds out of those categories. So you have it there. And you're wondering, what does this have to do with podcasts? So much, because what we've done now is when we're pulling together and curating resources for them, one of the things we do is we create a link or a tab in our Pathfinders for podcast content. So that's the most recent development from this summer of 2018, where I listened to podcasts the whole summer. I've really developed a passion for podcasting. I have formidable respect for the journalists who put these things together, and for the production quality of that content. So podcasting has become an important part of our library collection. So when I described this, I wanted to say, all right, we are definitely at a watershed moment when it comes to podcasting. And I had gotten my hands on the Edison Report, which is something that's done every year. And they said that audio ingestion basically has impact. How does this process impact the processing that we do of the content we learn? And how are we using it in schools? And how are we using audio content for inquiry? So that Edison Report, they just released their new study that just came out. And so podcast consumption for women is up 7%. And that's and for men, it's up 3%. So whereas before there was a 7% difference in 2019, between men and women, it's now only a 3% difference between men and women in 2019. It's funny because a lot of people think that most podcast consumption is done by women. And actually, it turns out, according to the Edison Report, that is not the case. Podcast awareness, 75% of Americans now know what a podcast is. And 37% have listened within the last month. And that is up 5% from last year. So there's definitely, we're like, when we say a watershed moment, we are definitely at a watershed moment. And really, this is like, this is for ebooks, this is for podcasting, and also, oddly, for YouTube. And if you're wondering how YouTube makes that list, isn't that video, right? YouTube is, among teenagers, the number one used social media platform. And if you're thinking, what does YouTube have to do with music? It's actually the fourth use that people did. So that study that showed YouTube as the number one social media platform for teens, that comes from Pew. And Pew didn't do that same study last year. Instead, they did this other study that said, wait, if YouTube is a number one used social media platform among teenagers, let's find out how people are actually using YouTube. And this is the list, which is pretty fascinating. But I was interested that number four was music or dance. The fact that podcasts are really important for kids and learning how to read, and have a real role in our life, and audiobooks do too, is not new. These books are from 2015, 2012, 2011, 2016. And I've added just this slide to the resources for today. So you can take a look at some really great articles that I can't provide for free because they're database protected. They're behind a paywall. But there's some really great content in there, and I would definitely recommend that you take a look at them. I do some sort of summarizing of some of the content from those articles, but they're really good. So, in fact, let me spend a moment on that. So, you know, there's a lot, there's still this myth, my husband being the number one saying, well, audio consuming is not reading. And I really disagree with that. The audio consumption deepens reading. It links oral and written literacy, it promotes literacy, it models fluency, it facilitates decoding, and all of those have been researched, and that's what they come from, is some of these articles here. So that's just sort of a quick synopsis of what you can get out of audio reading. So it really does enhance the reading experience. One study, and I forget whose it is, but it's in the list, says, well, it was a brain study, and then the brain study, it said, well, ear and eye processing are really different functions. and they work very differently, they actually work remarkably similarly when it comes to language comprehension. And I thought that was an interesting piece. So today we're going to talk about audio content, and we're going to talk about podcasts. We're going to talk about audiobooks and audio magazines. I wonder if you know, like, which is pretty cool. And we're going to talk about text to speech very briefly, not so much in great length, because that's always, of course, the least popular way to consume. So let's start with podcasts for a minute. First, where do you find content? And Lisa and I were talking right before we opened up the room. And my favorite app for podcasting is Pocket Casts. And I'll share a couple reasons why. The most obvious that people who have an iPhone tend to go to is Apple Podcasts. If you have a Droid phone, you probably go to Google Podcasts. And then there are a number of others. A lot of people use Spotify. Stitcher is also quite nice. I haven't tried the others, but that's a 2020 list that came out, I think, in March, so pretty recently. So it's a pretty solid list. I do really, really love Pocket Casts for a couple of reasons. One is it's visually very appealing. Two, I really like the settings. So not only can you have auto download if you just love a podcast and you always want to have it available offline. So if you fly a lot, that might be a really useful thing. Or if you somehow get out of connectivity and you want to be able to see it. So you want to be able to grab it when you're, if I went down to the beach every day, I would want something that I listen to at the beach every day to be on auto download, because the service is pretty spotty out there. Notifications. So do you want it to tell you the so-and-so just released a new podcast? Do you want to add it to your up next list, which is great. So it automatically goes into your feed. And then there's a whole bunch of other playback effects and skipping first and skipping last and so forth and so on. So that's great. The most super, super exciting thing is when you go to share your episode, you can link to the entire episode. But wait. If you look down on the far right, you can link to the current position in the podcast that you are listening to at the moment. That is very powerful. And I'll tell you where it's really powerful in the K-12 environment. When I'm out and about walking the dog or doing whatever it is that I'm doing, and I know what those research questions are that our kids are working on, I can just click share, click link to this episode, and send it to a kid. And that has been amazing. It's been transformative over the course of the last semester since we started using this functionality. So I really find it super powerful. So I talk about podcasting, and I kind of want to take a look under the hood, because there's a lot of mechanics about podcasting I don't really understand. I've been a longtime radio listener, and I don't really understand. Like, some of the podcasts I listen to are radio shows that I've been listening to for 25 years, right? So, like, Morning Edition or The Brian Lehrer Show or On the Media or Wait, Don't Tell Me. Those are podcasts, but they're also radio shows. I've been listening to them forever and ever and ever. So what's the difference, right? On the right is my daughter's very, very pregnant friend at my daughter's wedding. And her name is Kat Brewer. And she's also the daughter-in-law of Lisa Schmucki's best friend from Princeton, which is just a whole weird coincidence. But anyway, she was due to deliver the baby the Thursday before the Sunday of the wedding. And that was her giving a speech at my daughter's wedding. So I reached out to her because Kat has worked for WBUR for quite a few years. I want to say probably 8 or 9, maybe. And I honestly am not exactly sure. But she's worked for NPR for a very long time, and she works for WBUR in Boston. She used to be a producer at On Point, which is a radio program that is now also a podcast. But now she's working at iLab, which is their podcasting studio at WBUR in Boston. And so these are the podcasts that they produce. You may see some favorites there. So I did an interview with Kat, and this is really the looking under the hood, because I could have done this a gazillion slides out of this one interview, but I actually just put it into an outline, and I'll go through it with you real fast. So when I said, Kat, what's the difference between radio and podcasting? I use them both interchangeably almost, and I would like to know what's different about it. And she said, well, kind of think about it as the difference between network television and premium cable television. You have a very specialized audience. You have freedom to make it as short or as long as you want. You don't have to take scripted ad breaks at specific times. Your geographic market is universal, like it's everybody. So you're not regional to the Boston area or to the San Francisco area. You know, you're basically any content they produce is considered national or nationally syndicated, right? So let's talk about ads for a minute. I'm going to share a little quick story. Ad content can be really problematic. What Next is one of my favorite podcasts. It's done by Mary Harris through Slate Magazine. It is brilliant content, really sharp piece of journalism, excellent program. This is an email I sent to Mary Harris a couple of months ago because they were consistently promoting a product that made it impossible for me to recommend any of their podcasts to students. And they had one after another that was really, really great for our kids, for those research questions that they were working on. And I couldn't share it because the copy was like just off the charts inappropriate. The product was off the charts inappropriate. I would have had a firestorm with parents. It would have been completely off the charts. So I reached out to them. I wrote them a letter and I said, you know what? You are actually denying an entire market from using your content. And they, within two weeks, something like that, they pulled that content and they now Progressive is their sponsor. And Google, it's all very innocuous stuff. So I did want to talk a little bit about the ad content because that's tricky business. One of the things I learned from my conversation with Kat yesterday or Monday or Tuesday was that the ads are placed dynamically so they can change. So if I listen to a podcast and I really think it's great and I push it out to a kid and that kid doesn't listen to it for a month or maybe 2 years later, the ad content may be switched. So you have to be really careful. Because some of the ad content is really inappropriate. Even Sam Adams is a really major sponsor for a lot of the Boston content. And I don't know how parents are going to feel about that, right? So that's something that we have to, that's a beer. So we have to be careful about that. So one workaround to make sure you're protected is to download the podcast, make sure that it's running the way you want it to, and then you'll be safe. And then you upload it to your content and you have the kids access it that way. So you can set up a Google Drive, you can put it in your library collection, you can add it to Mackin or to Destiny or whatever it is that you're using to have your kids access the collection items. So that's that. Underwriting is kind of interesting. You can have underwriting by the like sort of a la PBS or NPR. You can have voice by a journalist, and then you can have an actual endorsement by the publisher for a product. And Malcolm Gladwell is doing a really interesting version of that right now, where he's doing an entire sort of sidebar podcast about the Lexus make of cars, which is kind of interesting if you're a car person. I'm not sure I'm into it. I'm finding it kind of icky right now. So the content is really interesting also because we have this problem with, you know, we don't want inappropriate language and they're not regulated by the FCC at all. And so we are really at the mercy of them doing their due diligence and putting forth a disclaimer before they delve into content that's inappropriate or language that's inappropriate for young people. So one of the nice things about Apple Podcasts is they actually have a little E because it's an RSS feed. So they have a little E that marks whether it's explicit or not. So that's a useful tool, but that's not necessarily true for some of the other people. So the other thing that they have to be careful, that's interesting is like, if it's put out by PBS or by NPR or by any kind of public radio station or even ABC or another organization that has to answer to the FCC because they have content in another world that predates podcasting, so television, radio, before that, they tend to be a lot more mindful of that because they don't want to get into trouble that's going to get them into problems into the other area. So they have to be careful. Whereas, let's say something that's all they do is podcast publication, they might be way more loose with the content and the language. And so that may be something that you, so it's good to know who publishes the podcast that you're using. So discoverability is another thing that's really hard. They tend to, if you listen to a lot of podcasts, you'll notice that they tend to sort of push one another's podcasts as like, oh, and if you like this, you'll do this. Or somebody comes in and they share a podcast. So it's like cross-posting a blog. Or at the end, they'll put in a snippet to sort of a teaser to another podcast. They figure they're going to get more discoverability if they work with people who are already listening to podcasts. Whereas if they stick a billboard up on a major highway, you know, only 37% of the American people have actually downloaded a podcast in the last month. That's a pretty small number. So you have to get the person to get out of their car, actually use whatever app it is that they use to access the content, start playing it, search for it, find it. Whereas if they're already listening, all they have to do is roll right over and go into there. So that's something that they're aware of. So you may recommend a podcast that leads to another podcast. So let's say I suggest something that's NPR, but maybe they're pushing something that's by an entirely different publisher. It doesn't happen often. They tend to cross-pollinate within their own publishing houses. So that's something to think about. And then, you know, 37, we haven't met the threshold at all. Like with 37% of the people who have clicked on a podcast in the last month, we've got a long way to go. So this is going to be an evolving thing. And I am finding it really exciting to get kids involved in learning about a new field almost and discovering this new world. And when I find that they actually sit down or go running and listen to something, they come back and they go, well, that was great. So I'm getting a lot of questions and I feel like I need to go listen to them. What is good for parents and preschoolers? My favorite title of a podcast is The Longest Shortest Time, and it's about parenting. And I think it really works well for parents of preschoolers. And I think the title says it all. It's like, you know, everything feels like it's taking forever and yet it all goes so fast. And it's really about the trials and tribulations of parents. What is a podcast? Well, I'm hoping that I've answered that question. So it's an audio file that you only listen to. So it's news, information. So we'll talk a little bit about those differences. So I want to thank Kat for being so incredibly informative. I really don't like turning librarians loose into a field with new format of content without giving them a firm understanding of how it works under the hood. And, you know, we have always recommended radio programs and television programs and that kind of content to our students and to our learners as part of their research process. We really make a point of making sure that our students are are using multimedia content. Introducing podcasts was new, but I really wanted to have some of those basics done. So I wanted to share that information. So that's great for big kids, but what about little kids? So I think that question's been sort of coming along. This issue of School Library Journal, which came out in 2018, I believe, is prime time for podcasts. So these are audio files, and the thing about audio files, it can be, I had these classifications in my spreadsheet there, but some are just news journalism. So there are some that come out every day. They're roughly 20 minutes. They're only journalism about today's news. It's like the ears equivalent of a newspaper article, right? Then you have weekly and monthly podcasts that come out around a certain theme where they explore that theme. One of my favorites of this is called Code Switch. It discusses issues of race, and they come out weekly on Thursdays, I believe. And it's hosted by two hosts, one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast. And they talk to each other and they interview people and they talk about major issues in the news and they talk about new books and literature and really how race is impacting our culture and how race is lived in our culture. That's the other segment. There is fiction. There was a show called Homecoming that came out, I think, on Netflix not too long ago. And that was started as a fictionalized podcast. It was it's a storytelling. It's a mystery that unfolds over the course of a series. There's real true crime drama. So Serial is probably the most famous of those. And it was about Adnan Syed, which was picked up by HBO. And it was about a girl who was killed, and the boy who was accused of killing her is currently serving a term in prison. And the journalist who started this very deep investigation really sort of explored all the facets of his prosecution. I know I'm missing something really important, but those are some big ones. My favorite true crime drama is called In the Dark, and there were two seasons that have come out, and one is more fascinating than the next. The most recent series of Serial, the Sarah Koenig goes and plants herself in a courtroom in Ohio, and she just records what she's saying, and in terms of, it's really some great piece of journalism also. So there's some really great content out there. And kids have also similar things. They have nonfiction. They have really short ones. They're like podcasts for a day. It can be a joke a day. It's literally a minute and a half long. Or you have storytelling, or you have poetry, or you have read-alouds. You have the back end of stories. You have authors talking about the books that they wrote. So there are also great content for kids. The magazine pitched this Kids Listen, but I do have to caution you, it's $3.99 a month, and I have no idea what their David of privacy is, because it's really meant as an individual subscription, so it's the kind of thing parents would sign on for their kids. I don't know how it would play into a classroom, but it was heavily touted in that article. Mackin has podcasts. So Walking Classroom, these are 15-minute segments. They're nonfiction. So we looked at an example of biographies the other day. So here we are. This is a Walking Classroom biographies. So if you subscribe to that for $25, you get 24 podcasts that are 15 minutes long. They're one-to-one users, so only one person can be using it at a time. But it's also a perpetual license, so you can have it. It's not going to expire at the end of 24 months. So that's pretty helpful. You can play them on the Mackin podcast can be played on the Mackin via audiobook reader, which is also nice. So if you have any Mackin audiobooks, they just kind of feed into your audiobook reader, just like everything else. And that's a great resource. Tales to Go, which I knew, I got to tell you, nothing about until yesterday. that comes up also, and those are stories, and there's so much content with Tales to Go. So, whoops. I wanted to share, you can also have nonfiction. I think I'm missing a slide here. You can have also nonfiction. So when we started to open up classifications, it was like artists, and then it went into deeper and deeper. I'm definitely missing a slide here. I don't know where it went. So I want to talk a little bit about Monica Brady Myroff, who's the president of ListenWise. So we're talking about audio content, and this is coming back to the person who said, how does this help readers? So Monica Brady Myroff, again, another WBUR connection, which is just bizarre. Yes, my daughter used to work at WBUR, so this is probably how I connected. But she created a company called ListenWise. And back in 2017, for one of our webinars, I interviewed her, and I included the webinar, the interview, in the resources for today. So it's like roughly 20, 25 minutes. And she talks about how she founded the company and what inspired her to do that. But it was precisely that her daughter, who wasn't a strong reader, listened to the radio all the time. And she worked for WBUR. So she was an attentive listener. And she realized that, you know, we are really missing a huge opportunity. So she created a database of NPR content. Now, it's not all of NPR content. It's just very carefully curated NPR content meant for middle schoolers mostly. But I mean, it would certainly be appropriate well into high school. So it's roughly, I think she thinks of it as 6th through 12th. And ListenWise is a great organization right now. Their content, it comes with lessons and quizzes, and it comes with, and all of it's free. Like, they have a premium subscription, but they've opened the floodgates, and everything is free. So it is great material for learners. So this is a really great opportunity for kids to listen to. So if they want to know about Thomas Jefferson, or if they want to know about slavery. And when I first interviewed her, I asked her, I said, you know, wait a minute, I can look all that stuff up on NPR. And she said, yeah, but really, can you? Because have you tried doing that? And she's right. I have tried doing that. It's really poorly indexed. And so this is a really valuable service. It's really targeted, selected materials that are appropriate for kids, and they have accompanying lesson plans and assessments. It's really great content. And right now it's completely free. So she's actually just got a grant from AT&T. And so she's going to start doing podcasts at ListenWise. So she had a bunch of questions that she just sent out to a bunch of people who are webinating, but these are some great questions for you to answer because she's really trying to get this information. So the podcast would basically, they would choose two current events, news stories, and they would edit them down so that they're really digestible, so that they're not too long, not too short, just the right. And they would build in some sort of comprehension questions. So imagine Time for Kids, but for your ears, right? That's the kind of thing that they're looking at. So I thought that was a pretty interesting format, and clearly she's got support for it. So I was pretty excited about that. So that's where she's going. So when I reached out to her saying, hey, I'm doing this thing on podcasting and audio content, what do you think? She said, oh yeah, let's definitely talk. So she touched base with me. I want to thank her for giving me her time on Monday. So this is the concept I already described. So, all right. So now we're going to talk a little bit about audiobooks and audio magazines. So Mackin has some really great audiobook content. In fact, today I found out tomorrow is World Book Day. So I put together a little video on how our kids should be accessing digital content while we're out of school. So I just put that in the resources for today also. I just recorded that this afternoon. You'll notice I'm wearing the same thing. So beyond content, podcasts, there's basically three categories. One is read along. So that comes back to what somebody said, how does audio content help readers? So the read along is definitely supports that. Audiobooks are obviously audiobooks, and text to speech, which is a little bit more challenging. So in Mackin, you can purchase a huge assortment. They have tons and tons and tons of read alongs. Not 32, they have far more than that. That just happened to be the collection we were looking at. So this is where the book is actually read to you by a real human voice. And they really make an effort to make it an artistic production so that the voice aligns with the story and the content and the message. So this is really helpful for kids who are emerging readers, English learners, and students with IEPs and 504. And just now, like anybody who's stuck home without the support of a teacher standing over you or helping you along, this is a really great experience. Tales to Go. This is where the Tales to Go came up. Oh, I remember. You can search for podcasts. So this is where my screens got mixed up. So Tales to Go, there's 10,000 audiobooks in Tales to Go. So a subscription is great, and you have fiction and nonfiction content. So see some of the examples of the nonfiction content that we had. They're coming up with a new platform that's responsive, so it will work much better on an iPhone or on a cell phone, mobile phone. And so that's another opportunity sort of to dive into that kind of audio content. And then the next thing that I would recommend also is reflowable. And reflowable content is actually where you have this mechanism at the bottom where it's allowing you to sort of look through your content. You can scrub through the book, you can pause it, you can change the voice of the reader, you can change the speed at which it is read. And that can be really valuable. Sometimes I turn on a book and the person is talking fast, they talk like me, which is really terrible. What you want to do is slow them down, right? So you can do that. You have a mechanism to do that. And sometimes you're in a hurry to get through the book and you just want them to go really fast and you can speed it up to 1.5. And sometimes people just talk slow and it drives me crazy. And I just hurry it up so that I can get them to sort of meet my brain needs. So those are some options. You can also change the audiobook. So this is for an actual ebook, but what you can do is you can change the interface for the reading and you can change the voice in which it's doing that. So this is for text to speech. So it's computer generated voice. And when you're doing the computer generated voice, the kids really do benefit from it being able to choose that, but also a kid with learning disabilities, one of the font options is has to do with dyslexia, and it weights the bottom of each letter, and so it really draws their eye to a part of that really helps them keep track of the letters in their proper sequence. So that's functional. That's really helpful. So now I want to talk a little bit about magazines, because this is another area that's just opened up in ways that are really interesting. I read this article over the weekend, in the Atlantic. It's called The Anxious Child. Well, it's actually got seven different names. I think they were piloting it by releasing it before the magazine came out and deciding what to put on the cover and decided at the last minute. But it's called The Anxious Child on the cover. It's called What Happens to American Childhood, and somewhere else it's called Parenting Anxious Children or something to that effect. It's a great article that any educator will find fascinating. A lot of it has to do with the anxiety of the children is linked to the anxiety of the parent. Also that 504s or actually any kind of accommodation may be detrimental to getting the kid to learn coping mechanisms. So fascinating article for any educator, really, really interesting. I noticed in reading the article online that there's this funny little ad that says, get the Autumn iPhone app in order to hear this magazine article. And so that really appealed to me because, as I said earlier, I'm a big audio processor. I really do most of my reading through my ears. We subscribe to something called Flipster. This is provided by EBSCO. So the kids can actually have a page turning digital reading experience. So all of our magazines are now in digital format. And this is what it looks like. But that doesn't give you the opportunity to have an audio experience with that magazine. But there is an app that does this. Originally, Audible.com created something called Audible Channels. It was really exciting. I absolutely loved it. And it was downright free if you were a member of Audible.com. That was back in 2016, 2017. And unfortunately, they pulled the plug on that project. But while I was digging around looking at some of the content that they've replaced it with, which is Audible Originals, I noticed while school's on pause, kids listen free. So starting today, you can stream hundreds of stories for the whole family that will help kids keep dreaming, learning, and just being kids, which is awfully nice. So Audible is offering some free services. That's really cool. Autumn is what happened to those magazines that I used to get online. So you can subscribe to as many, if you subscribe annually, which is expensive, it's $65 a year, but you can get pretty much most popular magazines. So The Atlantic, The New Yorker, New Republic, I'm looking here, New York Magazine, New York Times opinion section. It just goes on and on. It's huge, huge, huge list. ProPublica. You've got some really great current media that's read to you by a real person. So it's really an artistic production. They don't choose every article from a magazine or from a publication. They just choose a handful of them. So it's really sort of an abridged version of the magazine, but it's great content and really, really terrific. And if you find that you don't have enough time to digest this content, it's an opportunity. I really do love it. Another thing that can be really helpful for kids, and honestly, I didn't even know about this until Monday. I had a student who told me about this. So I give credit to Teo, my student, who told me all about this great thing. But there's a website called DIY Captions that allows you to grab some captions, basically take a URL from a YouTube video and post the URL into there, and then you can grab the captions and it will actually put all the text that's in that YouTube video into a file. So if you want to find a spot in something that you listen to, something that's audio that's on YouTube, you can actually go through and do a sort of a keyword search of that without having to scrub back and forth through the entire video to find that spot. That can be really helpful for kids who are using this for research. So that was one function that I thought was really a great idea. Another thing that we're finding very useful is the transcript. So a lot of the podcast, the people who put together podcasts, not so much NPR, because their product is radio in the first place, but Slate, which basically most of their content comes up, starts with an article that the host of the podcast actually just interviews the journalist who wrote the article for the publication. Those have transcripts. So if the publisher is really a print medium, and I say print, I should say text medium, and they're creating a podcast, there's a really good chance that they have a transcript. And our kids are finding that immensely beneficial. So what they do is they go off and they listen to it while they're doing one thing or another thing or another thing. Then they come back and they can go through the transcript and review it. So it helps them, they have much better reading comprehension when they do that. And two, it helps them find exactly what it is that they're looking for. And three, it really helps them know more, because they can go back and sort of check the facts. When I'm listening to a podcast and they're rambling through a bunch of percentages, I'm not going to remember that detail, and I'm going to want to know what their source is. But that's available here. And so when I look for, I really want to underscore that all podcasts are not the same. They're really quite different because it depends on who's publishing them. So that's something to keep in mind. The Daily by the New York Times is my favorite go-to podcast every single morning. I listen to it as soon as I walk out the door to walk a dog. And it's 20 minutes. It's really digestible. Lots of opinions on Michael Barbaro. The host has a voice that really endears some people and really drives other people crazy. They even joke about it on the promos for the podcast. But they too have a transcript, and it's a really solid transcript. It's really well done. And that's an important piece of it. I'm going to finish it early today. So my huge takeaway for this is that, you know, we need to find ways to bookmark what we are doing and what we are listening to. So then teach our kids to bookmark what they are doing and what they are listening to, because they will want to come back to it. Like, bookmarks make it possible for kids to use audio content as a research tool. And so while we want kids to use audio content for a wide variety of needs, from whether it be to, you know, learn to appreciate reading, to love reading, to appreciate poetry, to create poetry, to be stronger readers, to get more involved in their stories, to develop better comprehension, having bookmarks is really an important part of that process, because they want to be able to come back and to visit that. Okay, I've got a pile of questions I think I need to address. Okay, what about evaluating the credibility of podcasts like we do with other media? Great question, Susie. So that's where knowing who the publisher is very important. One of my favorite podcasts is Revisionist History. And that's by Malcolm Gladwell. And if you've listened or read to Talking to Strangers, his newest book, his new audiobook reads very much like his podcast. But when you're doing that, I mean, Malcolm Gladwell is challenged by lots of economists, and there's a lot of pushback on his content. You know, he comes up with these really fun books to read, but you know, you can push back on the content. And so being able to go back and consult a transcript or have a magazine to refer to. So that's why I love the content from the National Public Radio, from PBS. And you know, every public, it's not just National Public Radio, but every public radio station around the country has its own podcast content. So I think we saw the list out of WBUR. The list out of WNYC, the New York City public radio station, is incredible. And like Code Switch comes out of there. Death, Sex, and Money comes out of there, which I know it's a scandalous title, but it has some really great content that I've actually turned my kids onto in terms of listening to the stories themselves. They're really, really good. Terry Gross's Fresh Air comes out of Philadelphia. Originally, This American Life came out of WBEZ in Chicago, but I think they've been picked up by WNYC. And then the Minnesota Public Radio has amazing content. KQED has some really great content. They have an educational podcast called Mindshift, which started as a column, a blog, that is really a great piece of writing for educators about education and also parenting. I mean, I would say that it falls, you know, how common sense meets the needs of educators and a parenting. I would say Mindshift does the same. And they have a podcast. They run it by season. And I think, you know, they're running into problems, you know, finding the manpower, or the human power, I should say, to get that content produced. So great question, Susie. Know your publisher. It's just like anything else you're reading. You really want to be mindful of that. I find Bloomberg News does a whole bunch of podcasts, and they really sort of run the spectrum of like fiction to true crime to actual news. And I find them kind of kitschy. They have like too many cute sound effects in them. But that's just my personal opinion. That might be really appealing to teenagers, so, or to middle schoolers. It just isn't, I find it irksome to me. Well, so I talked about the preschoolers, is that you want those read-alongs. I mean, that's the kind of content that's really going to help your kids, especially now, because parents are trying to work with their little kids, like literally sitting on the floor next to them. So that's a really great resource to give to your kids. But I would go back and look at that school library journal, and it's in the sort of work, the references that I included in today's resources, because they have a lot of resources available for young children. What's a good pos for high school science? There's Science Friday is really good. Radio Lab is amazing. And I'm sure there are tons of others for science, for science researchers. I'm drawing a blank off the top of my head. How can I use this as a preschool teacher? There are educator podcasts that can help you with, you know, storytelling. Storytelling is a great topic. If you go into any podcast app and put in storytelling, you're going to get heaps of podcasts on storytelling, and that will range from people who do it to people who teach how to do it well. So I think those are some really good strategies. Preschool, there are podcasts that are stories. Like I said, there are jokes. I think I talked about some of these. I answered some of these questions. Podcasts good for teaching elementary students. Absolutely. There's a great deal of content out there. It's not my world, so I don't necessarily know them off the top of my head like I do the ones that I use with my kids. But the School Library Journal article is great. And this content is like, we all have these apps that have these great search tools. Just like put in child and see what you come up with, because it can really get you some great stuff. Is there storytelling on audio? Absolutely. There are lots of great narrative. Even the New Yorker does their own fiction piece. Like they have a fiction podcast. They have a poetry podcast. Like there's great content, and it's free. It's all free. I mean, here we are like trying to figure out, okay, I don't have enough eBooks for my kids because we're all stuck home and we thought we were going to give them print. So this is an opportunity. See what there is. I mean, most of us have it right here on our phone. So open up one of those apps and start digging around. I don't have the answers to every grade level and every discipline. I don't. I teach one age group, well, two really, if you count graduate students. But I primarily teach one age group. But I do know that there is great power, and we can find amazing personalization in this. If we know what our kids want to know, we can connect them with the sources that they need. I just don't know what your kids want to know. I know what my kids want to know. Math for high school. Put in math in an app and see what you come up with. I don't teach a lot of math, and my math teachers don't do a lot of research. So there's not a lot of cross-pollination between our library program and the math department, unfortunately. It tends to come at the end of the year after AP. And then the kids end up doing really high-end technical problem solving. So this would be more Maker, more how to do it. There's a how-to podcast that's really great. For ES, I would do anything that helps the kids get the written language to an ear language so that they have sort of that multi-sensory experience, where they can see it and have it read to them, I find is really helpful for ESL. So anything that has a transcript that they can listen to is great. I would definitely recommend that. Do I recommend any, like I said, I think I've answered this question a couple times now, but anything that has a transcript is great for kids with learning disabilities and with language ability, who are developing language skills in English. Because you want to be able to have that. You know, when I first was introduced to podcasts as a vehicle for my own information, it was from a colleague, and she left in 2014. And she gave me a list of podcasts that I now listen to. It took my brain and my customs and a dog, I have to be honest, to get me to a place where I listen to, like, it's just part of my day. But I listen to podcasts while I cook, while I shower, like while I do housework. Like I have wireless headphones. These wireless headphones are amazing. They are bone conducted, so I can hear I can hear with my ears to what's happening in the world, but they're conducting the sound into my head through this bone right here. And so they're wireless, and I go about, they're so comfortable, I don't even know they're on. I'll put them in the resources for today. But they really do change my ability. So that's a huge part of it. If you're used to having this kind of a listening experience, it's really like nobody wants this, all of this hanging on your ears and plugging your ears. Those doohickeys that Apple came up with, I'm going to tell you, I don't love them. That's just me. They fall out. If you like, you got to take one out to have a conversation with somebody. And then what, where are you going to put it? You got to take out the thing that they come in and put, you lose them, and then they're gone, and then they're not replaceable or they're dead. So I do find that how you listen to, like literally the hardware involved, makes a difference as to how much content you can process. If you have small kids at home, it's a different story. I don't have small kids at home. My kids all grown up. And I do get out and walk because I have a super hyper dog and he's crazy if I don't. So I walk a lot. And so, you know, gardening, like there's just like weird, if you're out and about and your head is empty, you can always put something in it. That's all I can tell you. But it is a practice. It takes a while to develop. And usually it takes one crazy thing to get you to latch onto it. Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, headphone, we used to loan earbuds to our students. I mean, this all feels so weird to talk about now when Massachusetts just announced they're closing schools for the rest of the year. It's official. So I know that that's also part of this might seem really out of context, but if we can find a way to encourage our kids to start processing information through audio, I know that struggling readers are struggling a lot right now. And maybe this is something that we can offer to help them. So if we can find a way to communicate with parents that there's some really great resources out there for them that are free, then maybe that's a resource. I would definitely look into ListenWise. If all their content is free and all those lesson plans are available, get that out to your social studies teachers, your English teachers. There's some great content there. I mean, the beauty of where we are right now is that so much stuff is free. I did a sort of pop-up webinar with a friend of mine last week about distance learning. And I got to tell you, that was part of the griping, believe it or not, among 1,000 participants in that webinar was that we're so flooded with stuff, we don't even know where to start. And I'm feeling a little bit the same way. And you know, the bottom line is know your kids and start picking through to find the things that will just work for them. So ListenWise, that was the it's ListenWise, and that is how you spell it. It's one word, ListenWise. And that is where Monica Brady Meyerhoff takes these NPR content, very carefully curated, and attaches it to lesson plans and assessments. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope you guys go and put great stuff in your kids' ears. and, you know, I think it opens up a whole new world of reading, whether it be journalism or poetry or fiction or narrative storytelling or for big kids or for little kids and certainly for your own benefit. You know, it's, I find that it's, you know, my days are filled with really great information and fascinating stories and new perspectives and exposure to other things that I'd never considered how hard they were or how interesting they were. And it's opened up my world. So I recommend it. So there's my pet project. All right. Thank you very much. Stay safe.